Christopher, you know happiness is the relationship between a well-blended cigar and a glass of Kentucky bourbon.
That sounds familiar, Lee.
Yeah, I say it all the time.
I know. You don't stop saying it.
Well, I'm like a sensei.
It's on your T-shirt right now.
It is. For nearly a decade, our friends over at Jake's Cigar Bar in Brandon Crossing have welcomed folks from across Kentucky to find the perfect match of bourbon and cigars.
Across the nation.
What is your favorite part of the new Jake's?
I like the structure of the building.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's
describe
got kind
it.
Of a barn, like a rustic sort of feel.
Now, use words that I haven't before.
I haven't been there yet.
I know you haven't.
I know.
What a crime.
I need to.
Why?
I live out of town.
Oh, God.
I need to get there. You're right. There's no excuse.
There is no excuse.
Yeah.
It's my favorite hangout.
I know.
They got over 200 different bourbons and 300 different cigars. It's just beautiful. Jake's, the only establishment that provides the variety Kentucky deserves. A new location at Jake's is now open real close to Drake's. It's Brandon Crossing. Go over and see them. Make sure you like them on Facebook and Instagram to learn more about the future of Jake's.
Now, those two rhyme. Make sure you go to Jake's.
Not Drake's.
Not Drake's.
Yeah, I mean, you go to Drake's if you wanted to.
Jake's and Drake's.
Yeah. But
go to Jake's.
They
should use that, though, in some sort of marketing.
Together?
Yeah, Jake's and Drake's. Drake's and Jake's.
Yeah, you're a genius.
Cakes. Get a cake store next to it.
Let's start the show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 61 of the Funkhauser Situation. I am Chris Tomlin. I am the editor and curator of the pop culture wing of KSR Funkhauser. And with me, as always, is my friend, lifelong partner.
Well.
Lifelong?
Really?
No, not lifelong.
I don't think I've known you my entire life.
Lee Cruz. Lee, how are you?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. You look good.
Point of contention to begin the show, if I may. My sister.
I just want the record to reflect that I opened this with, "Hey Lee, you look good," and now you got you're answering with point of contention.
Yeah.
Okay.
My sister-in-law is new to this podcast. She just
Welcome.
Discovered it a couple of days ago. You know, so she's only heard one or two episodes. You know,
yeah.
Well, where you been? You know, but she doesn't understand you the way I do, and I think you owe our audience an apology. And because I reflect upon what you did last week during the episode, you misled, and I think you've hurt our brand.
It's the first time hearing of this.
Well, it's because your head's in the sand. Remember your semi-recommendation for the Allison Williams Netflix piece. And the movie's called what?
The Perfection.
The Perfection.
I also said your mileage may vary.
Yeah.
I said this is not for everyone.
Okay, so
I made that very, very clear.
I get first of all, when you started talking about it, again, this is a audio medium, not a visual medium.
Yeah.
So I could see on your beautiful cherub face the mischief that was behind your eyes. And I knew you were because I could see mischief,
right?
And I that's why I pointedly asked you, "Is this good?" And then you wouldn't answer the question,
right?
So you wanted to torture me, but inadvertently you tortured innocent people, because I was told, because she recommended to my brother, they think they're going to get some epic Lawrence of Arabia cinema changing.
I never described it like that.
Yeah, but they don't know you.
Right, okay.
So they go and they watch this, and my brother describes it to me. And how
he told you all about it?
Yeah, and how it ends.
Yeah.
Because
crazy.
And my brother's like, "What the hell was that? Why? Who would recommend that?" And I said, "Well, I don't think he actually recommended it. I think he was just going to torture me with it."
It was a gaslighting is what it was.
Yeah, it was gaslighting. Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm surprised. Well,
will you say you're sorry to the people who have watched that?
No, because I think you're probably, I was able to bring an experience to those people that they would not have otherwise had. And I'm sure that for good or bad, they now will remember it forever.
Yeah.
You didn't watch it? You just heard about it?
I don't need to watch it.
Well.
They watched it.
If you know what it's all about now, you don't need to watch it.
Well, I know how it ends.
Yeah.
And I've seen enough of the trailer to know it's
You shouldn't watch the trailer. Yeah. You
just
kind of
popped up, and then I watched it that way.
But. It is. You got to admit, though, that knowing what you know about it now, it does sound pretty bananas, doesn't it?
Yeah. I wouldn't invest time into it, though.
Well, I invested time at, like, 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
It was not time that I was going to be productive doing other things. Mm. That's what I would recommend. If you're going to watch that movie, don't carve any time out of your day. Do it on bonus time.
Yeah, well, you just need to give clarification as to when you're trying to torture me and when you're making a recommendation. Because we're not going to have any credibility anymore. We're going to tell people, oh, you got to see this. And they're going to think back, no, I know what that perfection thing debacle was that Tomlin tried to get me to
I
watch.
Still think that people should check it out.
Yeah. By the way, I've gotten suggestions from people on Twitter, too, where they think that you would be a pretty good voice for a lap dog, a chihuahua. I'm starting to get all of these. Nobody gives you the benefit of a large breed animal, though. It's always the small lap dog. They think that's how you would sound. Or your voice would lend credence to that characterization.
I don't know how I feel about that. So what you're saying is people think my voice sounds funny. Yeah. That's a huge shock to me in my life.
What was the story when you would be on KSR? What would folks say about you?
Oh, yeah. I got everything. I got he sounds like a person who's inhaling helium. he's the mayor of Munchkin City. He sounds like Ryan Lemon talking through a fan. Like all kinds of things. Yeah. But this is my voice. This is my lot in life. So thank you very much, everybody. All you,
have you
perfect
thought about
human
it?
Beings out
yeah,
there.
That's, yeah. Well, that's right.
Right
they, are,
yeah.
they are, especially in social
yeah,
media.
Exactly.
They're all perfect out there. Have you thought about elocution? Have you thought about doing
electrocution?
Not
I don't
electrocution.
Be electrocuted.
By the way, I am receiving treatments for a pinched nerve in my neck.
I thought you're getting laser hair removal.
Well, that's the thing. So they do electric stimuli occasionally, but I keep calling it electrolysis.
Yeah.
Which is the hair removal.
Yeah.
I got to remember
I've
it's
done
electric
that before.
Stimulant.
I've done that. I'd like you to put the thing on it. Oh. It makes your nerve like,
yeah.
It's nuts.
They put like 5 or 6 leads on me. Stinson Chiropractic. I'll just give them a plug.
There you go.
Very good. Anyway, and they put them on 6 or 7, and they crank the juice up to where I involuntarily, this left shoulder, yeah. It jumps like a frog being dissected
nuts,
in biology
it?
Class. Yeah, yeah, it's weird.
Yeah. Is it helping?
Yeah, I think so, because I was in real bad shape.
You described it to me as if
ago.
There was a something on your back that was like grabbing onto your shoulders or something like that, right? Like you said.
Yeah,
that,
it sounded like, I don't know what the politically correct term is.
Yeah.
What is it? A little person.
Yeah.
A little person sitting on my shoulder.
Right. Yeah. But, I mean, it's help now? You're doing better?
Yeah. I still have a little bit of numbness. Like
you know
this
what
thumb.
We need to do? We need to set you up with one of those things during this podcast. And whenever I want to, I can just hit a button and send your jolts of electricity into your body.
Is not one of the greatest comedy scenes of all time in Ghostbusters.
The opening scene of Ghostbusters.
Bill Murray torturing that college kid.
Yeah.
And his gum flies out of his mouth.
I didn't know I was going to receive electric shocks. You applied, didn't you? We're paying you, aren't we?
And he's just doing it so he could get with that co-ed.
More details are coming out about that Ghostbusters movie, by the way. Paul Rudd is going to be in it.
Oh, really? Okay.
And I see the writing on the wall as to what this thing's going to be.
Okay.
Because Paul Rudd apparently plays a professor, like a teacher.
Uh-huh.
And then the other people they've announced are like early 20-somethings. Mm-hmm. My guess, and of course there's nothing been put out about Ghostbusters 2020 yet, is that this is going to be something that has to do with college-age students getting into the Ghostbusting game.
Is it a different world?
No, I think it's the same because everybody's back, right?
Is Bill Murray back?
I think so.
Okay.
I don't know. I know it's Jason Reitman with the blessing of Ivan.
Yeah, I haven't seen. Now, here's what's going to happen to you. If you like this movie, you're going to be a sexist.
Why? Because I...
You didn't like the other one.
Well, I didn't like the other one because I didn't think it was very funny.
That doesn't matter.
I love all those ladies.
That doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, I like all those ladies.
I do, too. Again, I've told you this 1,000 times. as much as I like The Hangover, Bridesmaids was a funnier movie. To me, Bridesmaid was a better movie than The Hangover. And they're sort of the same genre, is why I'm comparing
them. That's a good point.
It's just for joke, that was a better movie. I'm like you. I don't care. I'm just telling you there's people out there.
Right, I know.
That
no,
when
you're
you
right.
say this.
You're correct. That's
now,
correct.
It may not be
it's
funny.
It's not fair, but I mean, yeah, it wasn't. I will say this. I've always said this about that. We've talked about this many times on this show. The first half of it, where it's just them interacting with each other, when there's like Paul Feig's writing, mm-hmm. it's great.
Yeah.
When they actually get into the action of it, I feel like the movie falls apart. But, I mean, you look at it. I mean, like, Kristen Wiig is going to be the villain in the next Wonder Woman movie.
Yeah, I think I heard that.
And
yeah.
I just read yesterday that Melissa McCarthy, God bless her, she's a comic genius.
Absolutely.
She's an SNL host all-star.
Yep.
She is going to play Ursula in the live-action Little Mermaid movie.
Wow.
Because now, of course, we have to make all of our cartoons into live-action movies. That's the thing now, right?
Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah.
I didn't
but
know they were
not
doing
bad.
That.
That's not a bad call. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although Ursula's not very comical in Little Mermaid.
But she can be.
Yeah.
Are you going to go see The Lion King when it comes out?
Oh,
you going to
take
the kids to
that? Yeah, I'm going to. I loved Lion King's one of my favorite cartoon movies. And then Jon Favreau's doing it. He did The Jungle Book. I've gone well on the record as saying I thought The Jungle Book was great.
Which did you like better, the live action or the animated?
Jungle Book?
Yeah.
I probably the live action.
Not me, animated.
Well, I just didn't,
I love King Louie.
Yeah, I did like King Louie. Who voiced him? Was that
Louie Prima?
Was it Louie Prima that did it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why it was so good. I was trying to think of who from that genre, and who was like a jazz singer.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was great.
And Baloo, played by Jack Benny's old
Phil Harris.
Yeah. I love that guy.
Yeah,
man.
He did a lot.
Although Bill Murray was good too.
Yeah,
but Phil Harris was excellent.
And your boy Idris Elba was Shere Khan in the live action.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. It was really good.
Where did I see Idris Elba pop up recently?
Well, he's coming
else?
Out with that new Fast and Furious. He's the villain.
Oh yeah.
In that franchise.
Ridiculous. Hobbs and Shaw.
Yeah, Hobbs and Shaw.
I'll watch that.
You
a lot
will?
Of that. Yeah, of course I will. I love Statham and I love The Rock.
I love Idris Elba.
Hey, I know. So there you go. You gotta
Idris Elba can act. The other two you mentioned cannot.
It does not look like they're giving him much to work with in this new movie though. But Statham's great. Statham is an action guy and he's kind of self-effacing. He's likable.
I really did like him. Statham in the Melissa McCarthy movie where played sort of the dumb CIA guy.
Oh, he stole the movie in that. Yeah, he kind of spoofed his own character in that.
Right.
I liked him in The Meg. The Meg's a terrible movie.
It was a horrible movie.
But he's not, I mean, it's an action. It was like an early 90s movie, you know?
Yeah.
He kind of has that throwback, right, to those early days of Schwarzenegger, Stallone, just a rock tough guy kind of, you know, like a steely tough guy kind of character.
Yeah. I don't know that he has the same gravitas as Schwarzenegger and Stallone.
Well, don't forget, Statham was also in an excellent movie, and a legit excellent movie, in Snatch.
Yeah.
Snatch is a fantastic movie.
It's okay.
Snatch is great.
This is coming from the guy who wanted us to watch The Perfection.
I still think.
You know what was an underrated Brad Pitt movie? Fury. Or as you call it, Furry.
Fury was great. That I've always described as being Memphis Belle on a tank.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're just, it's about a.
You had the claustrophobic moments.
Yeah.
The anticipation of, like, what was it, 300 or 400 Nazis surrounding them as they're waiting. That's the best
moments. That's
a loaded
cast, too.
Yeah, it was. That's the best cinematic moments is anticipation. Case in point, Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. The best part of last season was when they knew they were on the horizon, the White Walkers,
mm-hmm.
and it's about to begin. And those tense moments, a really good director can milk that and make it really good.
And likewise, the moments before the Battle of the Bastards in the season before, two seasons before, where Jon Snow goes up against Bolton Ramsey, is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That.
And that was good, too, because they were getting ready to face off. You think they're going down.
Braveheart.
Braveheart's great.
Yeah.
Braveheart's so rewatchable.
William Wallace is giving the speech on the horse going up and down, and you're waiting for battle to begin.
What are our best, our favorite war movie moments? This is a good topic.
Yeah, it is. You know what they're remaking? It looks visually good. It's what's his Roland Emmerich. It's Midway. And when I was a kid, I would watch the Battle of Midway. It was, I forgot who was in it, but it was guys like Charlton Heston, you know, and it was the telling
Bronson.
Of,
I think Charles Bronson
may have been.
That,
may have been.
But it wasn't called Midway. It was called the Battle of the Bulge, right?
No.
Wasn't that the movie?
No. No. The Battle of the Bulge is in the European theater. Midway's in the Pacific.
I watch all my movies in American theaters. Oh, I didn't know I didn't know it was called a different thing over in
Midway's
Europe.
Midway's an island.
I know.
Moron. Oh, God. Help
Midway,
me.
Also a great video game back in the day.
Yeah.
You know one of my favorite war movies ever, and I think it's a perfect movie, although it's hard to look at as a whole because it's so segmented, is Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah.
Because the first half is training, and that's arguably the best part of the movie.
Right.
But then they go over to the war, and they have the scene where the sniper's shooting everybody and they can't find them. But, man, R. Lee Ermey is that drill sergeant.
Army.
Man.
Yeah, scary.
And it's, to this day, Vincent D'Onofrio's.
Yeah.
I mean, he's such a creepy dude in that
movie. What's
the
deal with his eye? Does he have a lazy eye? Does he have something going on?
I don't know him.
I know, but there are times. There are times he seems very normal, his eyesight, and then there are moments in some movies where it twitches, and I'm like, how does he do that? Because I thought
he's faking a lazy eye.
I think he's got, because it's not as bad. So I'm wondering, is he that devoted to the craft that he can get this eye to do something wonky?
I don't know. That would be an odd affectation to just adapt.
I'm trying
for
to remember
movies.
What movie. I mean, and maybe it's just a CG effect. He had one eye that was.
They're not CGing his twitching eye.
Well, it's the pupil that's twitching. It's not like.
Oh, I see that. That happens though. Yeah. I see that in movies all the time when two people are staring each other down. Some people's pupils go back and forth real fast.
Not he has just one do it though. It's just one eye does.
Maybe that's his thing.
Yeah.
But he's great in Full Metal Jacket. I mean.
Yeah, no, he's a great
and
actor.
And Modine is
I
great.
I really like him.
Matthew Modine's great.
You know what else he was really good in was the.
Men in Black.
No.
You remember him in the first Men in Black, right?
Really?
He plays the farmer who gets in him in like the first part of the movie.
And if you want an alien, you get a twitchy eye guy.
Yeah, there you go.
But no, he was so good as Vince Vaughn's brother in the breakup or whatever it is with Jennifer Aniston.
Is that what that was?
Remember he owned the boat company, or no, the tour company.
Was it the breakup? Yeah, I think, you're right. It took place in Chicago.
Yeah, and Vince Vaughn was, you know, a ne'er-do-well, responsibility, and he's trying to just help me out here, will you please?
He can play anything, really. He's pretty versatile. I mean, he was on SVU for a long time, wasn't he? And then he was in.
Oh, he's a solid actor.
He was on Daredevil. He played Kingpin in the Daredevil series.
Oh, I forgot about that, yeah.
Yeah. He's done a lot of stuff. You know a movie, and this is going to probably. In the interest of race, you know, there are movies that you see and you're like. There are famous movies that you're like, I was never crazy about that movie.
Mm-hmm.
One of those for me is Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Maybe because I saw it at a young age and I didn't understand it that well. And so I never really understood it or never really gave it the shake or didn't have the historical context or what have you. But I never really felt like Apocalypse Now was the masterpiece everybody seems to think it was.
Well,
did you?
No, I agree. It was great performances, but a director who was a little too self-indulgent. You know what I mean?
You also had Brando in there.
Right.
Who is also a study in self-indulgence.
Right.
Yeah.
But Robert Duvall's fantastic. I mean, that's iconic with the copters, the helicopters coming in.
Yeah.
Smell smell napalm. And he doesn't flinch. Everybody's taking cover, and he's just standing there as shells blow up around him.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I just felt like that. It was way too long. It was like, oh, God, the director's in love with everything about this.
For me, the movie that kind of educated me on life in Vietnam was Platoon.
Yeah.
Which is a good
Charlie Sheen.
Yeah, and Sean Penn? No. Sean Penn's Casualties of War. Who else? Lawrence Fishburne in Platoon?
Maybe.
There's a lot of people from Platoon that you forget are in Platoon. I'm going to look that up.
Casualties of War was Michael J. Fox, too, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Seemed miscast in that.
Yeah, Platoon cast. Platoon
kept
had...
Kept waiting for Dr. Emmett Brown to show
Willem
up.
Willem Dafoe.
Yeah.
Charlie Sheen. Tom Berenger. Who else is in that? Kevin Dillon.
Oh, yeah.
Who is a drama from Keith David.
Mm-hmm.
John C. McGinley from Scrubs. Johnny Depp is in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Tony Todd, who played Candyman in the horror movie Candyman.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I remember seeing that, and that was the first war, Vietnam War movie that kind of stuck with me.
You know, speaking of war movies, a veteran buddy of mine who was a little young for Nam, but he did tours. He was in Yugoslavia, and then he did the Gulf War. He said one of the more realistic scenes, fighting scenes, battle scenes, mm-hmm. is actually in Forrest Gump.
Which scene?
Well, when he saved or tried to save Bubba.
When he's carrying him through the forest?
Yeah, but because I guess the...
We can't get him out of the fox. Like
they, yeah, well, Viet Cong, they use, because you saw tracers. And a lot of times that would happen, you know, so tracers are used so you can see where you're actually aiming.
Right.
So you'd see, it looks like lasers from Star Wars, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But the whole ambush scene, he said that was as realistic as he's seen in a while.
Yeah, Saving Private Ryan's good.
Obviously.
I mean, yeah. I mean, not a dry eye in the house at the end of that one.
Well, Hanks. You're so good. I saw, you know
I
what?
I thought you were going to say Hanks was the only dry eye in the house.
You know what talk show I end up watching clips of because I don't get it is the Graham Norton show. I end up watching that, and the format for that is he
awesome.
Brings every celebrity he's got out at one time, essentially.
Right.
So they're all there on a couch. And Hanks ends up stealing the show anytime he's on that.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
yeah, it's interesting because you all like Keanu Reeves and
yeah,
some
sort of
comedian.
Or they'll have a connection somehow.
Corden has adopted that as well. He does
that
James now,
Corden,
too. He kind of brings everybody out at the same time, which I feel like is kind of low budget because he definitely just lifted that format from Graham Norton.
And I prefer Graham Norton.
Yeah, Graham Norton's really likable. He's he's really famous over there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hanks, they had Hanks – read a line from Forrest Gump because they had the British sprinter who was in the Olympics, and this is sort of an old clip, but whatever the last Summer Olympics was.
Mm-hmm.
And so because it was all about people would see this guy, and they'd yell, run, Forrest, run, to Mo, whatever Mo's name was, Mo Farah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
And so Hanks, and it was just funny to watch him, because they had cue cards for him to read the line, about running, so I just running.
Can he still do it?
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean,
he jumped right
into it, and it was just crazy because he's in a suit and tie, and he's on a British talk show, but he was doing that.
Is there a celebrity you'd want to meet more than Tom Hanks?
No, obviously not.
I mean, he just seems like the kind of – I was listening, and I sent this to you, Conan O'Brien's podcast, which you shouldn't listen to. You should keep listening to this podcast.
Right.
But Conan O'Brien had Martin Short on.
Yeah.
And there was a great line in there where Conan was talking about Tom Hanks, and he said that Tom Hanks has gone on record as saying if he could be a fly on the wall at any time in history
mm-hmm.
– and he's a huge history buff – it would have been – to be in the room when that cast of SCTV, that mm-hmm. Eugene Levy, Martin Short, Candy, when they were like just spitballing.
Right.
Like he's fascinated with those comics and what they did.
You know, Hanks, you know how he developed the voice for Forrest Gump, right?
No.
So they hired the young Forrest, right? And the young Forrest, who now I think is still an actor, he's probably 28 years old or whatever.
Yeah.
He was from Alabama and had that very thick accent.
Mm-hmm.
So he talked like that. And the director is Robert Zemeckis, right?
Yeah.
And they're trying to discuss. They're trying to help the kid to sound more like Hanks. And then Hanks said, well, why don't I just sound like the kid and make this easier?
That's awesome.
So Hanks learned. So the kid was hanging out with Hanks, so Hanks could pick up his accent.
Right.
So they just reversed it.
That's great.
So that's why he talked like that.
Can I get you to do something for me? Can I hear
here we go.
What a conversation between Forrest Gump and Hervé Villechaize would sound like?
Give me a topic.
Let's do national debt.
Okay. I don't have much money.
You don't need the money.
I love it. I love it. It's like they're in the room.
Yeah. Wasn't it?
Braveheart's good. We talked about Braveheart. Fury. There's so many good war movies out. I mean, like, did Kubrick do another war movie or was Full Metal Jacket his only war movie?
I don't think I can think of an. Well, I don't think there is.
I'm going to look that up. I feel about war movies the same way I feel about gangster movies. In that they all are very similar, and then you get one or two that are just like head and shoulders above the rest.
Right.
You know? Like, for me, it was Goodfellas. Like, still watch other gangster movies, and I'm like, this is... Goodfellas is my gangster movie.
Mine too. Yeah, if it is on, I will stop whatever I'm doing and just finish it.
It's great. Yeah, every moment
Ray
of it
Liotta,
is great.
Ray Liotta, the whole thing. I love everything about it.
And he even did, you know, Casino, which is like Goodfellas, not as good as Goodfellas. Yeah. Then the Coens did Miller's Crossing, which is a great mob movie. Again, you put up next to Goodfellas, Goodfellas is better. I mean, Goodfellas is... So the music's in it, the lines, it's funny, it's serious.
Just, it's so enticing to watch. Again, they've got the lifestyle of wealth and privilege, but at such a high cost, and you can't trust anybody. That's what's so fascinating about it, is that they're making all this money, but they know at any moment what they assume is one of their best friends could kill them.
Right.
Could just turn on you. And that's the great thing about Goodfellas. If the order comes down, you can never turn your back. You never know
Joe Pesci.
When Joe Pesci.
Yeah.
Whatever.
When he walks in that room, he thinks he's getting made. And nope.
Yeah. You're getting done.
But you're right.
They're getting made.
I think the reason those genres sit so close together is that a mob movie is like a war movie, but the characters are less predictable.
Right.
In a war movie, you know that there's no chance that somebody in the foxhole is going to just turn around and take somebody else out.
Right.
You're all on the same team, and there's a protocol you have to follow. But in mob movies, if you do them right, like Goodfellas, you see that these people who are essentially soldiers in their own army are these former ne'er-do-wells, you know, just scoundrels, ruffians, you know, bullies, everything like that, and they've risen through, and there's that unpredictability of the character. It's like De Niro at the end of Goodfellas when he tries to get him to come into the shop.
Right.
Remember?
Uh-huh.
I mean, and Jimmy's been their friend the whole time, you know?
I liked there was a pretty good battle in Last of the Mohicans.
You know, I don't know that I've ever seen that from top to bottom.
Really? Daniel Day-Lewis.
I've seen a lot of it.
Could we just say that maybe, as much as we love Tom Hanks, you're still watching Tom Hanks, right?
Right. I know where you're going with this.
And as much as we love Denzel, it's always Denzel.
Yeah.
But there is one guy who is the best that may have ever been, and it's Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah.
You don't know. That guy is completely different.
Well, he's a notorious
crazy good
method actor.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, when he did Lincoln, like, He wanted to be dressed like Lincoln. Like, he wanted to – he stayed in character all the whole time.
Right.
Gary Oldman's similar. Like, Gary Oldman's in movies that I don't even know he's in that I like.
Yeah, he was great as Churchill.
Yeah.
He was great as Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah.
I love Gary Oldman.
I know you do. You love Churchill.
Yeah, I love Churchill.
I need to see that. I haven't seen
Cigar Smoker. He'd hang out with me at Jake's.
Yeah.
Not like you. You know what you are? You're a Neville Chamberlain.
I like to think of myself as an Oliver. Who is that? Who is the other the guy from World War One? Oliver.
Is it guy who set up the League of Nations? Who are we talking about?
Oh, he's the guy that.
Oliver Twist.
No, he's the guy that Elvis Costello sings about.
Oh, really? I didn't know there was a rock song about this Oliver guy from World War One.
Yeah, it's Oh man, I don't know.
I don't either.
Never mind.
See, riveting though. You've taken us down this path.
No, I just brought the whole thing to a standstill.
Yeah.
You been watching anything?
What is the last thing I saw? Well, I went and saw The Avengers for the third time.
Man, it's a lot of time invested in a movie.
I like it, though.
Oh, I like it, too. But, I mean, like, 3 hours is a long time.
Well, I wanted to see it one more time before they take it from the big screen. And
did you see it with the additional 6 minutes of content that they're saying they have put back out?
No, I didn't see any additional.
Are you sure?
I don't think so. I did. Well, because I was familiar with it, I did take 2 pee breaks. So maybe.
Because you knew.
Well, I think because I had an adult beverage before I went, and that really will work on the bladder. Am I right, Maria? Yes. So I don't, you know, that, because normally I, you know, at my age.
2 pee breaks.
Yeah.
You might want to.
Well, at my age, I go ahead and clear the system before I see an epic film like that so I can sit there the whole time.
Yeah.
But I saw it at the Regal, and you recline in those things.
You're more comfortable.
You're more comfortable. So I think it starts to activate quicker. And like I said, I had an adult beverage before I went. So that, you know, aggravates the prostate. They will tell you that.
Yeah, but still, two or three.
It's a 3-hour movie. And again, I had an adult. You're going to tell me when you've had drinks.
But if you,
you don't
the,
go to the.
If you clear
Maria,
the system.
Maria, what did he do when he got here? First thing he did, he went and peed.
I had 2 cups of coffee.
Okay, well, alcohol's worse than
caffeine.
Well,
guess what? I guarantee I'm not going to have to pee before the end of this podcast.
You're not drinking alcohol.
Well, I wasn't drinking alcohol on the way here.
Well, you're missing out.
Well, did you see, did you say they added an end scene?
So they, what's his face, Russo?
One
of the brothers, Joe, or one of them, comes up before the film starts and says, hey, stick around for some added stuff that only Regal audiences get. Because the previous experiences were at Cinemark, I guess. So I went, okay. It was.
Did you say that out loud?
Yeah, just like that.
I love that.
There was nobody in there. I went, okay. So I watched it. Okay, let's see. And I had another pee. So the second pee break, by the way, was during the credits. Okay, so don't act like. So I made it, you know. Anyway, and then I come back, and I'm waiting for this. And it is a scene they cut, which I don't even know how it would fit in the film. There's a burning skyscraper. And Al from Die Hard.
Al Powell? Sergeant Al Powell?
Sergeant Al Powell.
Reginald Vell Johnson?
Yes. Is the cop or the fire chief running the scene.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And there's people, and you can say, oh, they haven't finished this because the effects look horrible. And there's a fire up at the top, and they're like, oh, what are we going to do? Then you see the Hulk jump up there. Puts like 5 people on a satellite dish inside.
This would not have fit in the movie anyway.
I know. And then I think it was being bunked. And then jumps to another building and then on the ground and then lets everybody slide out of the satellite dish as if that wouldn't give them vertebrae damage. Like, we're fine. We just.
A giant.
Can you imagine the shock of the collision as you're falling? 200 feet.
Screaming because their arms have been broken.
Yeah. What? And now he's not finished. The CG.
Well, here's the other thing. Here's the other thing. There's no way those people would stay in that satellite dish. I've been on a roller coaster.
Oh yeah.
I am in a seatbelt. Well, and if I wasn't in a seatbelt when that coaster dropped, I would fly up into the air.
That's exactly right. Where they were supposedly hanging on, and you know Bruce Banner, the genius that he is,
smashing their faces into the
thinks that this is going to work. So anyway, he saves them, but he looks like, I kid you not, the early version of Nintendo. He was blockish.
Oh, so it was like a basic CG.
Yeah, very basic CG. But it's still Mark Ruffalo talking, and Al Powell talking back to him. And it's like, this was, and Russo said, this is one of our favorite scenes we had to cut. We just didn't have time.
Where would they put it?
I don't know.
Was he in, like, glasses Hulk mode?
No, he was. Well, yeah, he was because he was talking, obviously, so he wasn't. He was, what, Professor Hulk or whatever the reference. It was horrible. And then there was a sneak peek after that of the new Spider-Man.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
That looks good. That's this week with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
You know what? I like this Tom Holland kid.
Oh, I do, too.
You know why? Because, again, back to the Graham Norton show. the episode I saw, too, him and Hanks were there together. And he was as mesmerized with Tom Hanks as, I mean, it was, talk about hero worship.
Right.
Mr. Hanks. Yes, Mr. Hanks.
Well, for him, it's Woody, basically. I mean, like, well, he's true. Only 14 or 15 years old. Maybe he's older than that,
no,
probably.
He's probably 20-something.
But is he 20-something? Because Peter Parker's only, like, 16, I think.
Well, people play different ages. I don't know if you know that. Jeez, oh, Pete. Let me look him up. I'm going to look him up here.
I think I'm going to say he's 19, Tom Holland.
All right.
But even then,
here,
we're going to
look him up. Tom Holland, here we go. Born June 1st, 1996. What does that make him?
I don't know math.
I don't either.
Maria, you know what that is?
June 1st, 1996. How old does that make Tom Holland?
How old is Spider-Man? 23?
Yeah, she's right.
Is that right?
In 2006, he was 10. In 2016, he was 20. So, yeah.
That's why people tune into this podcast to hear us sound out math problems.
Let's just recap where we are, Maria. He said Tom Holland was 14.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, you did. Your original guess was 14, and he's recommended the Allison Williams bomb perfection. If anybody wonders why we can't get any movement on this show.
I want to see this, though. I loved the first one. The first Tom Holland Spider-Man.
Homecoming?
Yeah, I thought it was great.
Michael Keaton was great.
It was great. It was fun. It was light. Michael Keaton brought a sort of menacing tone to it.
It was real tension. When you open the door and it's,
oh my god,
that's my girlfriend's dad.
I know, yeah.
Yeah, and then Keaton is so good as he's looking in the rearview mirror when he's taking him to homecoming.
Yeah,
And then
trying
Keaton
to figure out who he is.
And realizes who he is. And you see it on his face.
Baiting him with questions to get what he wants out of it. Yeah, and Tom Holland sort of seems familiar as well. And then they figure it out and he turns around. Yeah, puts the gun on that seat.
Right, my spider sense is going up. Or as Aunt May calls it, my Peter tingle.
Is that what she calls it?
Yeah, in the trailer I saw. Because she throws a banana at him, and it hits him in the head. And he goes, Aunt May. She goes, well, you can dodge bullets, but can't catch bananas. Doesn't your Peter tingle work? And he goes, please stop calling it that.
Now, here's the thing about that new Spider-Man that I'm not crazy about. I don't know why we now have to go back into the event. What happened in the Avengers?
Why? What's wrong with that?
I don't know. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I just think if we were sort of, Endgame did such a great job of just closing that out, right? And now we now have to go back in Spider-Man, and
what do you mean?
Explain how everything happened because you've seen
the
trailer.
5-year gap. Is that what you're talking
about? No, but you've seen the trailer. They talk about multiverses and everything like that in the trailer. So.
Right. When Thanos, geek friends told me, when Thanos exited and it shot that gamma ray stuff, that's what created mutants. So now they can go in these other directions. It goes in all these other multi-universes.
Yeah, and I think it's fine to explain that, but I hope that they're leaning into that in the trailer more than it's a part of the movie.
Why does that bother you?
Because I just feel this new Spider-Man franchise is so likable and bright and breezy that I think that...
Are you talking about a movie or a fabric softener?
I'm talking about a... I just don't know that we need to keep going back. I don't know that every movie from here on out has to have a big scene about Thanos' snap. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying, like, why can't... Let's move on now. We've all gotten past it.
That bother you?
I think that it will tie... I think it will hold everything down for this next phase.
Really?
Yeah.
That's what's going to... down.
What do you
that's gonna hold it down.
I'm serious.
That the origin story of Mysterio and whoever this new character is looks like Sandman to me,
but I
can't
tell. Fine, but what I'm saying is does every Marvel movie from here on out have to be like, well, which universe are we in? Is this universe or that universe? Or, you know, what about the snap and where was he for 5 years? And he wasn't here when this movie came out. And
I don't know that it's multi-universe anyway because Captain America clipped all the branches. What I'm telling you he did when he snapped this finger is he created mutants. So now we got more villains. It's not, you don't have to worry about parallel universes.
But that's what the Spider-Man trailer makes you makes it sound like. It sounds like there's
the
a multiverse situation.
The only person I know that was affected that way was you.
Well, I'm just, look, I'm not saying, I'm sure it will be great. My point is that we've seen the Endgame. We've all seen Endgame. Now let's just move forward with new stuff.
What is wrong with nostalgia?
I feel like 22 movies set up one movie, and now that ended, and it was like, this is the definitive ending, and now every movie from here on out, we got to go back, and Nick Fury's got to come in and go, hey guys, remember when everybody was gone for 5 years, and remember when this is a multiverse, and this happened in this multiverse, and now this person's come into this multiverse, and this person from this universe is here now, and they got two heads, and, you know, I mean, I don't think we need it. I think it's sort of a... Now, comic book nerds are going to rip me apart on this.
As well as they should.
But I just feel like you don't need it. Just go forward. Just go forward. Just have Spider-Man
so let me
now build
straight.
His own mythology with all these new villains.
Let me understand your argument. So, a being from another planet using creation, genesis, power, and magic destroys half the universe.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Yeah.
And the half actually survives 5 years later.
Yeah.
And you think, even though this affected families, countries, entire planets, you don't want to talk about it. You're done with that.
No, I think it's fine to mention at some point.
Let me just recommend something. I don't think you would be good at hospice.
I'm just saying that, you know...
I don't think you need to be in the convalescence business at all. Or therapy.
You don't think I belong in therapy?
You don't need to be in that business.
Oh, you don't need to be a therapist.
Where you're just telling people, get over it.
I'm just saying that we don't need to... I'm saying we don't need to commit a significant amount of time to this situation in every movie from now till the end of time.
God forbid you and your wife have to have counseling.
I'm just saying.
If that's a pat answer.
I'm not.
She's
I'm not,
not
going to
be
it.
Happy. Neither is the therapist.
I'm not against it. I just, you know, I don't need this. Oh, Mysterio's from a multiverse. Why don't we just make Mysterio a dude from this universe?
Well, I haven't seen the trailer where they're talking about a multiverse.
Oh yeah, there's one out there.
I'm going to have to look it up.
You will have to look it up. But
okay.
I'm sure it'll be great.
Mysterio, as I understand it. He's not even a real superhero dude.
He's
more like
not.
Iron Man. He was a stunt man who could create special effects.
Right.
So most of what he's doing is illusions.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think...
Sort of a con artist.
Correct. Yeah. I think he's setting up situations where then he can look like a hero.
Right.
Right? Then he can dispel it and he can be the hero. Which, played right, that character could be a lot of fun.
Right.
You know, I don't know how they're playing it yet. It's hard to tell from the trailer.
And it makes sense, too, after all the things that happened, even though I know you don't want to talk about it. But, you know, when the Earth was almost destroyed, and so now there's going to be a market for that. If you're an opportunist, you go, ooh, I could create my own villains and then go into the superhero business.
Here's the thing, though, Lee, is I know people who were like, I would like to watch The Avengers, but I don't have time to watch 23 movies, right? So, hypothetically, you should be able to jump back on the train now.
Name one movie in the Marvel Universe that does not stand alone.
Well, they all stand alone, but...
Okay, then,
what I'm
the
saying
problem?
Is, now if you want to jump back in and be like, okay, I missed the Avengers storyline. I'm going to jump back in on this new second wave. And
you
then
know,
all of a sudden, all they want to do
I
is
see.
Talk about everything
okay,
else.
Okay, I see. What, so
that's my point. My point is that if you... It now necessitates you having to go back and watch 23 movies.
Here's
which
what...
Which you should be able to jump in now with the new gang, with the new Anthony Mack... Well, I can't say it. People haven't seen Endgame. But, like, new characters being new characters, you know? And I think
who
that,
hasn't seen Endgame by now?
That's a good point. But, okay.
Anthony Mackie's the new Captain America.
Yeah, new Captain America. And presumably, we're going to have a new Iron Man as well. You know,
is that Gwyneth Paltrow?
I don't think so. That doesn't sound right. But
why wouldn't Rhodey just be the one?
He could just take on, yeah. But my point is that you kind of can start clean a little bit for people who missed the first one. Like my brother, he missed a bunch of them, so he's like, well, I'm not going to go back and watch 14 movies to get caught up on this. Mm-hmm. But he has an opportunity now. They have an opportunity to pull new fans in and kind of start them with
that's
this
what they
next
need
story
new
line.
Fans.
Well, people,
This is the most ridiculous
rant
I've ever
heard. Don't they want people to watch these movies?
Why don't you call Hollywood and tell them, by the way, let me help you here. You guys aren't doing very well with your Marvel Universe. And why don't you give us just a brief synopsis so people can watch the movie as a standalone vehicle? You don't think they've thought of that?
Yeah, I get you. By the way, I don't know if I told you this, and you might have seen it too. Did you see that Disneyland has now cordoned off a part of their park?
Cordon bleued it off?
Cordon bleued it off. No, and the graphics on the partition walls they've set up around it say Stark Industries.
Okay, now here I'm glad you brought this up because this aggravates me to no end. You know, you've given great ideas to Hollywood. Let me give a better idea to the folks at Disney in their theme parks.
Okay.
So, you know, they've got the Star Wars thing under construction down there at the Disney Studios.
I think it's open in like a month, isn't it?
Yeah, it's close.
Yeah.
The Disneyland one is open. Florida is not. But at Magic Kingdom, behind Space Mountain, they're building this brand new roller coaster that you fly, but the theme of it, and God help me, drives me nuts. Tron.
That seems like a serious misstep.
What? It was a bad movie originally.
It was
two
bad
worse
movies.
Sequel.
Yeah, I know.
It did no business. Yeah. Tron.
I hated it as a child.
I did too.
Then the second one came out, and I had no interest in that.
I did too, and I thought. I think what they because it
visually they say visually it
visually
could be
it would
cool.
work and it did well. It was originally in Japan in Tokyo, yeah. Disneyland.
Oh, that's, I think you're right.
So yeah. They got that one. So they brought it. Why wouldn't anybody with any common sense go Stark Industries? It's Tomorrowland. That's what Howard Stark did. Obviously, what Tony did. Why can't we make that some Iron Man ride? You own it.
Yeah.
Own it. Every little boy would go because Disneyland, or Disney World, I should say, it ignites the imagination. But it is, for all intents and purposes, and I'll sound sexist here, I guess, it is really girl-driven and heavy. It's all about, you know, a lot of princesses, a lot of the movies we watch and love. Mm-hmm. There's the Pirates of the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. Space Mountain is unisex, I think we could agree. But they don't have one for really don't.
Yeah.
Because everything else could be enjoyed by either boy or girl. And not that the little boys can't enjoy the princess stuff like I do.
Right.
You know.
Tangled.
I love Rapunzel.
Those luminaries.
Yeah, I love the luminaries.
But
it would just give you another option.
I've been in the past year. There is a almost purposeful lack of Marvel stuff at the Disney parks. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious as to why that is.
My guess is legalities. Even though they own film rights, they don't necessarily
own the properties.
Because Marvel in its own entity.
But wait. If you go to a Disney store, there is Marvel stuff everywhere.
Right.
Why are they not selling it at the parks?
Because, again, this is a guess, the legalities of over at Universal, they still have Spider-Man rides, they have the Incredible Hulk. I bet they've got some deal with amusement rides. Universal, whatever the deal they cut with Marvel.
Right.
And they're waiting for that to expire, I assume.
Right. So you think that you think there is a plan to make a phase of a Disney park?
You would have to be, but I just don't know why they wouldn't wait on the Tron thing.
You'd be crazy not to create some sort of a whole Marvel land.
Yeah, I mean, it's as successful as Star Wars. Why wouldn't you?
Somebody on Twitter will tell us exactly why. I have no I have no fear.
But somebody knows what the legalese is behind all this.
But, we've been yammering on here for a while.
Yeah. You got any hot goss or no?
I don't have any hot goss. I was hoping you'd bring some hot goss today.
I didn't bring any. I don't like
I know that Scooter Braun bought Taylor Swift's catalog.
What's that
She's
about?
She's not happy about that.
Yeah, what is it about? I heard somebody talk about that, and I don't know what it means.
Help me out. You're a political. Scooter Braun is.
I don't know who.
Was he Trump's first press secretary?
What?
I think he's a politician, isn't he?
Only political Scooter name I know is Scooter
Libby.
No, he's Libby.
Not. He's not. He is.
You're thinking of Scooter Libby.
He's an entertainment executive.
Yeah,
Scooter Libby's who I was thinking of.
Yeah, that's not even
Ari Fleischer. Ari Fleischer bought Taylor Swift's catalog.
Scooter Libby's not even a Trump person. What is wrong with you?
So anyway, Taylor Swift's not happy about that. So there you go.
Scooter Libby worked for Cheney.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah. So I don't know who Scooter Braun is. Well, and Taylor is upset because it's her catalog.
Yeah, he purchased the rights to her catalog. I'm going to look this up.
Happened with when Michael Jackson bought the Beatles catalog. Remember, and it upset Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
I think he has it now, though. He got it back.
Speaking of, I want to see.
Oh, yesterday.
Yesterday, maybe.
Yeah, we should go. I'm going to go tonight.
I know. Do
you want to go?
I'd love to go.
Well, let's go tonight.
Can't go tonight.
Why?
Because I don't want to do anything with you.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a great. Look. Here's the thing is I've already heard music purists apeshit on this movie, being like, well, you know, who's to say if the Beatles didn't exist, there wouldn't be another band that would have filled that hole and been as big as the Beatles. Well, of course. This is a fantasy movie. You know, we have to have this mentality of reasonability. Mm-hmm. We can't even enjoy a lighthearted romantic comedy based on the music of the Beatles, which for all intents and purposes looks delightful.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because pragmatists like you can't let us enjoy it.
You know, when we do the comedy competition, which we're going to start next week, I believe.
Oh, can I join in? Sometime?
Absolutely. You could be a judge
if you want. That was a lot of fun.
Occasionally you get a kid up there or an individual, and there's like, wow, this guy's really good. Like, really good. Like, and you ask him questions like, because I'm always curious, like, how many times you've been on stage? First or second time? Well, that's really polished. You start to realize that's stolen.
Oh, really? Do you see that a lot?
Not a lot, but I have figured it out occasionally. Like,
Your radar.
Sometimes I actually know the joke. If I've heard, I know who does it.
Do you call him out?
Oh, yeah.
Do you really?
Absolutely.
You say that's not your joke.
Yeah, you're not allowed to do that. A lot of them are, sometimes, and it's happened to well-known comics. When they start out, they don't know the rule. They think you can go up and do other people's material.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard, you know, people like Roseanne and
I've heard
Eddie
that
Murphy
too.
And all those guys originally, like, I was doing Richard Pryor's album. You know, you can't do it that
like
way.
Like cover, like almost like cover songs,
like
right?
Musicians do it, but comics do not. It's original thought.
That's interesting. I don't know why comics can't get away with it, though, because musicians get away with it.
Well, some comics do, like Carlos Mencia. For a little while.
Oh, yeah.
And then somebody catches him.
Yeah, where is he now?
Or your girl, Amy Schumer.
Amy Schumer, yeah.
But she got caught.
Yeah. She's really falling off the radar.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened. She had a baby recently. Did you see what she named her baby?
What?
Jean Attell. I know. I thought the same thing. I think it is both a double entendre.
Uh-huh.
And an homage to
Dave Attell. I love Dave
Attell. Who's awesome. And I think he's a longtime friend of him. I think he helped kind of give her some breaks.
We talked about, Bumping Mics?
I haven't watched it. Is it good,
though? Oh, my gosh. Yes, it's great.
Have you seen the historical roasts?
No, I haven't seen those.
It's okay. It's funny. They could have blown it out and made it bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, it's like Jeff Ross and then three sort of mid to low level comics playing other people. I think if they had put some more money behind it, they could have made it something really good. Like, I think they could have made it, like, drunk history level.
Right.
Interesting. But I feel like it was kind of it looks like they kind of threw it together pretty quick. Looks like it was done in a club.
Yeah.
And everything like that. But.
No, but I recommend Bumping Mics. I mean, the language obviously is rough like yours. But Jeff Ross and Dave Attell, it is so good.
I think Attell is one of the greats.
He's great.
Somebody was
saying.
And he's
getting better. He's one of those guys, he was made to be old.
Yeah.
You know, that's where he's comfortable, where he's just constantly cranky and complaining.
I heard comics one time talking about, I heard comics one time talking about how the two most cribbed cadences in comedy right now are Dave Attell and Mitch Hedberg.
Yeah.
Because they say if you listen to people, they talk like Dave Attell talked back in.
Right.
You know, they had that same cadence.
Hedberg's hard to do because he was such
Hedberg's hard to do, a jazz artist.
Everything was offbeat
was very quiet and here's a joke, you know. And like he was one of the first to kind of do that. And there are people who do that. Dimitri Martin does a very similar act to Hedberg. Now, I think they're contemporaries. I don't think Dimitri Martin is stealing his act, but. But yeah, they say, and I didn't realize until they said.
If you think about it, Jeselnik is doing a little bit of Hedberg.
Yeah, sure. But I didn't realize that thing about Attell is correct. And if you listen to Dave Attell's cadence on stage, you'll be like, oh, that is really familiar.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there are a lot of people that are kind of doing that.
Yeah.
But anyway, well, hey, good times. Good chatting.
Now, why don't you tell the audience when our next podcast is going
to
be?
Well, hopefully it'll be sooner than later, but we are getting ready to do the KSR Road Tour. So if it's coming to your town, go see it. And go see Matt and Ryan and Drew and the crew. And I will be there, too. You know, don't have to say hi to me. It's okay. I won't feel bad. Those guys are the show. And we'll be doing our show, Hey Kentucky, from a lot of those locations.
Okay.
So we'll be all over the place over the next 3 to 4 weeks.
And so then, answer the question. When are we going to our next podcast?
It might be like 3.5 weeks.
3.5 weeks.
Maybe. I'm sorry.
Right. Well, I just want the audience to know when they start their Twitter rants about how they missed the show, whose fault it is.
Well, know that we will miss our listeners equally.
Because I will be sitting here waiting because I have nothing to
just
do.
Just be sitting in a bar.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you'll be
having
doing.
Having to pee quite a bit.
Yeah.
Ready to go.
Yeah.
Me and Maria will be right here.
All right. Well, if I can make it, I'll join you.
Okay.
But thank you again.
You are tempting us with a co-host. I'm just going to tell you right now. Maria's had some great ideas on how to replace you.
You guys are so mean. who would bring content to this show if I wasn't here? What kind of content? Look at Maria. Maria just goes, oh, he's right.
Yeah.
Well, I texted you this morning and said, bring something to talk about.
I
and
did.
Then
you.
You brought one beef against me, and then we had to come up with everything else.
But I don't know why you have this anxiety attack, and we have been talking with no prep for 2 hours.
We could go longer. We
sure
got to stop
we could.
It. I wish we could go longer.
Really?
Yeah.
Why would you torture people that way?
I love it. I love hanging out with you. We have a good time.
We do have a good time.
Yeah. So thanks for joining us again. We'll see you when we see you.
Yep.
I guess. But enjoy the next couple of weeks. You'll probably be off, but we'll be back soon. And for Lee Cruz, I am Chris Tomlin. This has been episode 61 of the Funkhauser Situation. We'll see you guys in the near future, hopefully. Goodbye.